everybody on that nomadic.
First thing I want to say is I want to thank everybody that's here and believed in us and keeps coming back to this retreat time after time, because it's home for us up here, and we get to see the faces and the smiles. Wow, I'm not that tall. And the smiles that all of you bring up from wherever you come from and stuff. So thank you for supporting us and being part of. This speaker that I had been asked to ask, that I had to ask somebody to ask him, was, a good choice, I'm hearing. And I called my sponsor and, asked for a little direction on this. I have had not, heard him speak before, but he says that this message is going to be something you all want to be here for. So come on up, James. Literature Matters Home Group.
I appreciate being here.
I'm an addict. My name is James. And I truly want to thank God for allowing me to be here, alive and clean. I want to thank God for His grace. Thank Him for His mercy. Thank you for the program, Narcotics Anonymous. I want to thank God for a safe trip up here. Thank God for this program committee and opportunity to come share my experience, strength, and hope. Giving back to the program, Narcotics Anonymous, man. And I just hope that this message touches somebody's life, changes somebody's life. And as well, your life being changed, hope you pass it on so somebody else's life can be changed. Because it's not about us keeping it. It's really about just trying to give away as much as we possibly can to whoever we can so they can keep carrying this message. Narcotics Anonymous is a powerful place. And, honestly, I would not still be a part of Narcotics Anonymous if it wasn't. So I really thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. I tried everything you could think of, and nothing worked. So I got to Narcotics Anonymous. 12 steps, 12 traditions, sponsorship, support, and prayer and all that opened up my mind to other things. But prior to this, nothing could ever work for me. So, I really thank God for the program Narcotics Anonymous. And also for the chairperson, whoever involved, give me the 5-minute signal of when it's time to be done, because I start off a little slow, but once I get started, it's hard for me to stop. And honestly, because this program is wonderful, man. And God is good. Narcotics Anonymous is good. But new, if there's anybody here that's new, congratulations. Keep coming back. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. But don't misunderstand the word good. Good does not mean the absence of pain. Good just means in spite of pain, if you hold on, there's good coming out of that. I don't care what you go through. Look, we say this. Our worst day in Narcotics Anonymous beats my best day using. So, it's God is good. The program is good. And, so I just want to thank God for all that, man. I want to thank God for insight. Thank God for friendship. Mickey Harvey couldn't make it. He's my best friend. Man, I've been friends for 18 years. He was the best man at my wedding. We just been tight, man. When I got clean, he invited me into his house. Everything. And listen, y'all don't know, anybody that don't know Mickey. Mickey's a great guy. But here's what was more powerful for me. Now, I had friends. I had a lot of people that, blessed me, everything. But God used him to touch my life. And I had like 30 days more clean than him. When we met, we just clicked from day one. And this guy would let me into his house. It got to the point, I'd go to his house whenever I wanted, go into the refrigerator, I would spend the night. I've been at his cabin, know his family, daughter. I was considered like the brother. I was considered like the cousin, the uncle. And that was just so powerful for me, man. You're talking about, this black guy from Manchester going into these white people's house in Greenfield. And I've never had issues with a black, a white person, nothing, but it still is a powerful statement. And it brought healing to me. And then Mickey was married. I was going through a divorce, so he was married. So I've seen how a married man is supposed to act. I've seen how a man is supposed to treat the family, treat the wife. I've seen how the man is supposed to be committed. And it was just powerful to me because I never saw that in my house. So to see that with him, it helped change my life. It just gave me hope that one day I could do that too. So, you know, I thank God for him, and I just want to give him a shout out. You know, he couldn't make it again, a commitment for his daughter. And I understand. So, you know, just want to give him a shout out, man. But, you know, I was driving up a sponsor. He was supposed to come with me. I got a text this morning. He couldn't make it. And I love taking long drives. It's a time, man, where you could really, it's like another form of meditation. You could relax your mind, put on whatever music you want. You got no distractions. It's like being by yourself, and it's so peaceful, and it's like God speaks to you so much. Like, you hear so many things. You get so many revelations while you're driving. It's like a journey. And, like, when my wife first met me, she's like, where you been? I'm like, because I take a two-hour drive. I'll just drive down 279, drive to Ohio, and then come all the way back. But it just settles you. All my life, I chase stuff. I don't know about y'all. I chase stuff. I chase sex. I chase money. I chase clothes. I chase jewelry. I chase fantasies. I just chase stuff, and I always end up empty, even after I got it. So now I try to chase peace, which is really good. I try to chase peace. But so coming up here, you know, I was like, man, okay, it's cool. When I got the text, I said, I'll be by myself. I love listening to gospel music. So I'm having my gospel brunch on the highway. Me, coffee, and some gospel music coming up here, because it settles me. But then when I get close to here, I don't know about y'all, but when it's time to speak, sometimes with me, the closer it's time to speak, the more scared I get. And I start making excuses in my head how to get out of this. And I said, well, I'm going to go. If I get lost, I'll just call Keith or Edgar, tell them I'm lost, and they have to get another speaker. But I got to put in the effort to get here. And I don't know why that happens. Did that happen to y'all too sometimes? I'm like, why does this happen on your way? You start thinking about reasons not to do it. They're like, dude, go do it. What is wrong with you? Like, and I'll be honest, there's times where I've not did it, but I had a legitimate excuse, but I'd be glad that I ain't got to go. And it's not that I'm afraid or anything. I've shared some of my most shameful experiences, everything. I took Narcotics Anonymous as a spiritual hospital, and I took advantage of it. And I was like, whoever wanted to judge, I was on them. But I was taught, you spend time with God on your issues, he'll put you out in public. And when you share it, even though people may talk about you, it won't hurt. Because there'll be a shield around you. That's the honest God truth. And I'm not saying everybody needs to come share in Narcotics Anonymous and share their open of their past. He chose me to do it. I don't know why. I just know he did because I kept trying to get away from it, and I couldn't. I remember when I first started speaking in Narcotics Anonymous, I had less than a year clean, and I was already speaking at speaker jams. And they would call me to ask me to speak at speaker jams and fundraisers in other cities, because other cities you could speak with 6 months clean, 9 months clean, less than a year. And they kept asking me, and I would talk to my sponsor that every time I would get there, I would be stuck on talking about incest and all these other things that I thought I would never talk. I would be standing there babbling. And I hated it because I'm like, I don't want to talk about this. Then I realized I had to. It was part of my mission. I have a responsibility to God and Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm one of some. There's others, but I'm one of the ones that my message is you get honest openly, and it opens somebody else up. Even if they can't get honest in a meeting, at least they go get free somewhere else. And I think that's what it's all about. And I know our 12 steps talk about how we all have a different way of carrying this message. Some of us comes with the honesty. Some of us have the, some humor. All these different things, a way of carrying the message. But anyway, so I'm getting closer and closer. And then once I hit down here in the mountains, all this fog. Now I can't see. I'm scared now. I'm like, oh, I don't know where I'm going. And my first thought is, this black guy going into the woods. I know nothing about no woods. Am I going to hit a deer? Could I hit a deer before? You know what I mean? So I'm scared to death. Now I'm like, is this the part where I could turn around? And I looked at my phone. There's no reception. So I'm like, oh, my goodness, I'm in trouble. So I said, forget it. I thought about the airplane. Have you ever been on an airplane and been in turbulence or a storm? I think about what the pilot goes through. You know, when they fly on automatic power. They don't literally hold the plane anymore. And I thought about the airplane in our third step that I got to trust the instruments in my car. My car has a GPS in it. So I got to just trust the GPS, man. But I'm scared because I can barely see now. Don't know where I'm really going. And my mind is saying go back. My feelings are saying go back. But I know from experiences, trust the instruments that's inside of here. Just trust it. It ain't about if you can see or not. Trust and believe in the unseen. You know it's going to get you there because you got experiences of it working. So just trust it. The same way with flying on an airplane. I've been on an airplane. There was storms, and the guy would get on the mic, and he'd say, sorry, We got to go through this storm. We can't turn around. We have to go through it. Stay sitting down. Keep your seatbelt on. I'm like, oh, my God. But it's a powerful experience when you apply it to your life. Stay straight, because we always want to turn around when something happens. Always want to buck out. Anybody in here been whitewater rafting before? One of the things they teach you is when you go hit the boulder, lean into it, don't lean away. If you lean away when you hit the boulder, the raft will flip over and you'll end up in the water and possibly die. So that's how most people die in whitewater rafting. You lean away from the problem. Lean into the problem. Face the problem head on. It tells it all in our literature. It said the ability to face problems is necessary in order to stay clean. But I still want to turn around even though I know it's going to work out. Because there ain't nothing that ever happened to me that has not worked out. Nothing. I don't care what it is. It may not work out the way I had it set in my mind, but when I get outside of my own mind and think of the mind of God and think of the mind of support group, it always worked out. When I get outside of my emotions, it always worked out. I'm coming through the fog. I'm like, I'm just trusting. I'm serious. My heart's beeping. I'm like, woo, woo, woo. And then I come around that bend and I see a dam in front. And I can't tell that there's a curve. I just see this big dam and all this water coming at me. So I'm like, what the hell? Man, now I'm really scared. And then I see the curve. You can in my car, you can look at the screen and the GPS, you can look at it, and even though it ain't talking, if you take a look, it'll show you what curves are coming. So I hurried up and looked at the screen because I didn't know if I was going into this dam or what, and I looked at the screen, it showed the curve. All right, just take it. It was overwhelming. But once I got past and I looked back, I said, wow, that's beautiful. Did y'all see that when y'all came here? I thought it was, once I got past it and settled down and looked, I said, wow, that's beautiful to drive into that scenery like that. Then I'm going around some more, and I can see the lake right there, and it looked like it's eye level, like the lake can come over you. So like I said, I got fog, so I don't know. It's my first time up here. So my first experience, I'm scared, but I'm looking, and I'm taking my time, and I'm like, wow, this is beautiful. Then my reception came back on my phone, and I called Eggert and Keith, and they told me I was in the right place. And I settled in, man, and I'm here, and just give y'all that story, try to get out of the way a little bit. But I just thought it was powerful, but it's the same thing with life. You just got to go through it, man. We just got to go through it. So many times in my life, I always wanted to take the shortcut. I remember when GPS first came out, and I used to just play with mine. And like I said, I'm from Manchester, from the north side. And I remember punching in the ad, and I said, I'm going to see which way this GPS takes me. And I'm from Manchester. There's a certain way I've been going all my life. A certain way I would go. You could not tell me it wasn't the best, quickest, shortcut way to go. When I punch this GPS in, it's telling me which way to go. I said, this is stupid. Why would it want me to go all the way around and go that? And it just seemed like, oh, I said, I'm going to follow it anyway. When I followed it, I realized you miss the stop signs and the red lights. So it's less drama, less stopping, and I got there quicker. And I just couldn't believe it because I'm talking about years of doing something my own way. And following the GPS and how it really got me there a lot faster, a lot smoother. So, you know, I say that again, too, about Narcotics Anonymous. Man, I was reading the signs, the things and stuff up here, Together We Can, because it really is about together, because together we can. When you're following somebody, man, you're going to get to where you're supposed to be at, man. Like I said, I came to Narcotics Anonymous broken and lost, man. I came to Narcotics Anonymous hating people, hating the world, didn't care about nothing, and didn't even know why. That was the sad part. Didn't even know why. Couldn't understand. How did I end up smoking crack? What was wrong with me getting high? I cannot believe this. I'm like, what did I come to Narcotics Anonymous like this for? What happened to all of my dreams that I had? And I came here messed up, man, and I just could not understand. And then I came here with trust issues, everything, and then they started telling me I got to trust somebody. Got to get a sponsor, got to get a support group, got to talk to men. Are you serious? I'll talk to that girl, that girl, that girl, and that's going to be my support group. We click. And just being honest, I mean, that was the road I took. And all my life, all I ever did was sold drugs, got high, gambled, fought, shot people. That's all I ever did. I knew nothing else. Like I said, I saw nothing else in my life. That's all I knew, my mom and dad. I never knew my father. I didn't meet my real father until I was 24 years old. My stepfather was an alcoholic. Him and my mom got together when I was 2 years old. They stayed together for 40-something years. I don't even know how they did it. All they ever did was fight, stab, cuss, beat up each other, everything. My mom never drank or nothing, but my dad stayed drunk. They would stab each other. I would be in the middle getting stabbed and cut because I'm always trying to break it up. And I just don't understand. They stayed together for 40-something years. And I just said, wow, that was pretty deep for me. But this is all I saw all my life. All of my family members, we were all drug dealers. Nobody did nothing in our family. Nobody ever had driver's license. Nobody did nothing. We sold drugs. We gambled. We cheated on our woman. We beat up our women. We beat up dudes. We set people up. That's all we ever knew. All my life. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, it was all I had. I never went to school, man. I got kicked out of high school. They kicked me out. They said, you're terrible. Don't come back. Here's how self-centered I was. I'll never forget. I was at Langley. And it was my birthday. You know, school starts in September. My birthday's 9/11. So it was like about a day or two before my birthday, and I got called over the speaker to the office. And all I'm thinking is they want to call me to the office to tell me happy birthday. You're talking about this retarded dude. All I did was fight, never had good grades. Back then, when we did our report card, they're different now, but back then you had the carbon copy, and they were right. It would write out. So I would always have straight E's with 40-something days absent. So I would always take a blue ink pen and write over straight over the E and make them B's, all these B's. So when I took them out to my mom, she thought her son was getting straight B's all the time. But I was terrible, and they called me in the office. They said, James, you got one more time to fight this year, and we're kicking you out. And I didn't know what was wrong. And I'll tell you the honest God truth. I would do stuff to people, and on my face it might look like I didn't care, but my heart would hurt. But even though my heart would hurt, and I still couldn't stop hurting people. And I couldn't figure out why. I didn't know I was so filled with resentment, anger, fear, insecurity. I didn't know because I was having sex with sisters and cousins for all those years that all that hurt and that shame and that guilt was causing me to act out on people because I wanted a different life. I didn't know none of these things, man. I didn't know that I was hurt because I really wanted my daddy. I didn't know I was hurt and scared because I watched my mom and dad fight all the time. I didn't know I was hurt and scared and insecure because I didn't know how to really, I knew how to read, but I didn't know how to comprehend. Like, it would take me, I would have to read something 20 times in order to comprehend. So I would get angry and just shut down and not even want to do anything. But I didn't realize that I couldn't comprehend because I was in too much pain to focus. I didn't know. I didn't know that I peed in the bed for years because I was in pain. I thought I was just a mess, a lazy dude, don't want to get up to go to the bathroom. I didn't know, but step work changed my whole perspective about what was really going on with me. Like we say in our thing, we blame people, places, and things for our situation. I blame me. I blame me for being so terrible. I was a kid, a powerless little kid that wasn't responsible for all the stuff that he was going through. I became responsible once I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and now I'm responsible for doing step work. I'm responsible for sharing my true feelings. I'm responsible for letting go of secrets. I'm responsible for getting a sponsor, a support group, a home group. I'm responsible for reading literature. I'm responsible for praying. I'm responsible for forgiveness, for acceptance, for love, for commitment, for courage. I'm responsible for all those things. But then I wasn't. I came to Narcotics Anonymous after 30 days clean. I started selling dope again. I was selling dope. I would come to the meeting. I would pray for the still suffering addict in the prayer circle, knowing I just bagged up dope 2 hours before the meeting. I knew nothing else. It was all I thought about it. I need enough money. Nobody's going to like me. I got to be able to buy some more clothes. I only had one outfit and a pair of raggedy tennis shoes when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. The crack and everything took everything away from me. And I figured if I didn't have no clothes or money, these girls ain't going to like me. I need me a girl. I need somebody in order for me to be okay. I didn't know all these sexual issues was kicking my behind. I ended up with, you know, they say one is too many and a thousand never enough. I ended up messing with 6 women at one time. And when I came in here, I was still married, even though we were separated. I'm messing with 6 women at one time. Couldn't sleep without having sex. My true story is this here, man. I went about 4 days clean in Narcotics Anonymous without eating, without sleeping, without changing clothes, without taking a shower, chasing sex. Clean. And it hit me like, damn, this is what I did with crack. I would go trick. I can have sex with you when you leave, then I go to the corner and trick because I couldn't get enough. I kept my TV on. I kept the lights on. I had my own apartment. I would still go pay for a hotel. I couldn't understand anything that I was doing. I would sit food out to thaw out in the morning. So I said, when I come back from after the meeting, I'm going to cook this food. I wouldn't come back. The food be stinking up the whole place. I'm like, man, it's like I'm getting high. This is insane. I couldn't sleep at night. My pillow kept talking to me. I'm telling you, I had to have something to fix me. And I was seeking it, and I was chasing it, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter if it was your wife. It didn't matter if you was my best friend's girlfriend. It nothing mattered. I had to have it. I felt like I was going to go crazy. And I was sick and suffering, man. And then I started going to people saying, listen, I need help. I need to do some step work because they're like, James, you can't do no step work yet. You got to wait till you get a year. You'll get high if you try to do step work right now. I said, dude, let me tell you what I'm doing. Listen to this. I had sex with four girls yesterday, and then after they left, I still masturbated. Something's wrong with me. I said, dude, prior to that, I bagged up all this dope before they even came over. I said, dude, I can't sleep at night because I hear all these voices in my head about all the rotten stuff I've done in the past. I said, dude, please, I need step work. Man, you ain't ready for that. You'll get high. I said, if I don't do something, I'm going to get high. I said, I hear all y'all talking about step work and freedom. I'm asking for it. I know I need it, but I don't know how to get it, and I need somebody to guide me. Can somebody please help me? I am really willing, but I just don't know how. Just don't know how, man. You ever had a broke-down car where you broke down on the side of the highway and you're willing to fix it because you're trying to get somewhere, but you don't know how? And then sometimes you might know how, but you don't have the tools to fix it. So you're still stuck. And that's how I was. I want to do something about this. I don't like how I am anymore. I don't like dogging these girls, even though I kept dogging y'all. I didn't like it. It was breaking my heart to see the sadness on their face. I knew I was dogging them. I'm telling you, man. I didn't know why. I wasn't in touch with the incest. I had literally forgot about all the incest and stuff. I forgot about, honestly, and I'm going to get through a lot of this. Like I said, when is this over? All right. But anyway, it got to the point where I had forgot. I wrote about this later, but I had forgot that I didn't know that I used to be sitting on my aunt's floor. Me and my aunt, she was my favorite aunt. And she would be in the bed asleep, and I would be at the bottom of the bed watching TV but lifting the covers up, looking in between her legs and couldn't understand why. I didn't realize none of this while I was acting out. I realized once I'd done step work, those same issues of my past was driving me in the present, and if I wouldn't have changed it, I would have got high again whether I want to or not. Some people don't believe that. I watched so many people get high. A friend of mine celebrated 10 years clean with me a while ago. And he talked about never getting high and blah, blah, blah. He had a problem with God. He had a problem with a lot of stuff. And everybody's process is different. And next you know, I mean, we celebrated his 10 years, went to dinner, everything, man. And that next weekend, he was high. This guy that I used to call, he had 14 years clean. I called him my spiritual advisor. He guided me through steps and through everything. Called him my spiritual advisor. 14 years clean, he got high. I see sponsees all the time. Why do I need to do step work? Why do I need to do this? I talk about this. I talk about that. I don't know why you need to do it. I just know they say that it works, so I'm not questioning it. Same way with the GPS. I don't question my GPS if I don't know where I'm going. Just follow it. It don't matter. It's going to get you there. It don't even matter what avenue you take. Whatever avenue it takes you on, obviously God wants you to see something while you're on it. Whether you agree with it or not, it's a journey we all must take. And I've seen so many people realize that they don't want to get with this program. It's a 12-step program for a reason. And it tells us that those who don't do this program relapse. It don't say what day. It ain't going to give you no date. But I guarantee you will if you don't get honest and share the shame. Our disease has to attach itself to something. Shame, guilt, resentment, anger, fear. Look, I learned a lot about reservations. You read the first set, it talks about reservations all through our work. Reservations is no longer me seeing a bottle of beer or drugs. I've seen all that stuff. My reservations now is my unwillingness to change. My reservations is resentments, my anger, my fears, my insecurities, my doubt, my lack of courage, my lack of relationship with God and other people. That's a reservation. I'm reserving a place for relapse. Look, our literature talks about improving upon. We're supposed to be here to get with God and get a better relationship with God. Some people have a problem with God. Well, get with a power greater than, or get with the principles that come from God. Because having a relationship with principles is a relationship with God, and it will empower you, and you'll get what God got the more you go to that God. God wouldn't tell us that we keep what we have only by giving it away, right? It's the same for Him. He keeps what He had by giving it away. He's sitting there waiting to give it to us. That's why the more I pray to God, I get what He has. I get courage. I get faith. I get confidence. I get self-esteem. I get self-worth. I get healing. I get acceptance. I get honesty, open-mindedness. I get all these different things. And as a result of those spiritual things, he give me physical things for the people that don't believe in the spiritual yet. They see evidence of the physical so they can come to believe in the spiritual. That's how God works. Because he does what's best for the group. Our literature says God does what's best for the group. That's why in the beginning, many of us turn to our higher power, to the group as our higher power in the beginning. That's what our literature says. Because we ain't really there spiritually. So we look at physical things in order to attract us. And it's God's way of setting us up. He's bad. So look, I'm begging for help because I know something's wrong with me. And I knew that I would get high because even though I was living contrary to what Narcotics Anonymous say I should do, I did believe that there was peace, joy, love, and acceptance in this program, and I believed the steps worked. Somehow I believed it. I don't know why I believed it, but I believed it. Then I knew something was wrong because I'm living worse than when I was in the streets. Dude, I'm acting out. I had 9 home groups. They love me. I'm selling dope. Where do you get all these new clothes? How do you get jewelry, Otto? How do you get this? Oh, I'm collecting unemployment before I got clean. You know, I was working. Now I'm collecting unemployment. I just go to meetings all day. Lying. Lying. And I'm telling you, every lie, I felt bad, Dennis. I felt bad. That's not who I was, but I didn't know I was changing. I didn't know I was changing internally. I really didn't. I just knew in my mind I wanted something different. I just knew in my mind that, dude, this is how you always been. It don't even feel good now, even though it feels good for moments. But they be quick fixed with a long-term consequence. And I didn't know that the more women I had was because of the more pain I was in. The more stuff I'm doing is the more pain I'm in. It's the same thing as having an operation. When depending on my mom died of cancer, and the doctor said, we got to heavily sedate her so that we can cover up the pain so that she can die as comfortable as possible. So the more women I had, the more pain I was trying to cover up. The more dope I did, it was the more pain I was trying to cover up. I'm telling you, and dope was not the problem. That's why step work is important. If dope was the problem, then I'd have got high as a baby. I wasn't high going to the dope man. We can't blame it on dope. On my way to the dope man, I wasn't already high. Something made me go ignore all the evidence of what drugs did to me and walk to the dope man and say, give me some, even though I saw what it did to people. So addiction distorts rational thought. Even while you're clean, it'll distort rational thought and tell you that you'll be okay. You just need some crack. Ain't that crazy? You ain't high going to the dope man. So let's cut it out. You can't blame addiction on drugs. You're not. The first time you ever got high, you wasn't high. Right? We wasn't. So let's get real. It's addiction. It distorts rational thought. And you should know it's real because it tried to kill you and you wasn't high yet. You attempted suicide. And I say you, but I'm talking about me. I attempted suicide and I wasn't high. I seen what crack and heroin did to thousands of people. Not one. I seen it. I was a dope man. I saw what it was doing to people. I was on the corner and watched people running to me like crazy to get this stuff. And they nasty, dirty, abscess all over them. Everything, they were bummed. This is before it bothered me. This is before I started getting high. I saw what it did, and I ignored the evidence anyway. So what made me think I come to Narcotics Anonymous and all I got to do is not get high, and I won't get high? When denial is one of our number ones. And then basic text, it says, what can I do? It said our number one excuse for using is self-pity, loneliness, and fear. It don't say our number one excuse for using is drugs. Loneliness, self-pity, and fear. Number one excuses. Self-pity. I hated myself for the stuff that I was doing. Incest with cousins and sisters. And then I hated myself because even though I knew it was wrong, because my mom raised us in the church, we knew what was right from wrong. You ain't even got to be in the church to know that ain't right. But I couldn't stop, and it would happen for years. I wasn't raping them. We was going back and forth with each other for years as kids. Here's what really tore me up. I knew it was wrong, but it felt good. So how about that? It felt good. So I'm telling you, that shame has to get fed once you stop getting high. And he's just going to get fed. Like it said, the book says again, our literature is powerful. And I study literature. I love Narcotics Anonymous. It says the pain forces us to seek a power greater than. But understand, the book talks about two power, a higher power and a destructive power. So basically asking, what power are you going to seek? When the pain and the shame and the guilt kicks in, are we going to seek the higher power or the destructive power? And for them first 6 months or so, I was seeking the destructive power all of my mind, heart, body, and soul. And I was hurting people, man. And I was a mess. And they just kept the guy that was sponsoring me. I love him. I thank God for him. I understood. All he kept saying is, just don't take none. I'm like, man, step with. Man, just don't take none. You'll be all right. I don't want you to get high. I said, man, nah. I started praying to God. In spite of how terrible I would pray three times a day. Because I believed in God. Even though I hated God. I did. I knew there was a God, but I hated him. My mother had a nervous breakdown when I was 9 years old. And I thought, God, how could you do that to her as much as she loves you? I mean, I've seen my mom be committed to God. Then all the stuff we was going through, I blamed God. I said, you're a rotten dude. And I can remember at 9 taking my first drink of vodka. 10, 11 years old, I was already smoking cigarettes. I was snatching purses. I was stealing cars. I would take dudes' wallets. I would stand by the bar, wait for the drunk guys to come out. I was already doing it, and I wasn't getting high yet. And I remember literally looking up to the sky saying, F you, God. Here's what I'm going to do. Sweetheart, just how you treat my mom? Here's what I'm going to do. So I believed in him, but I hated him because I thought his ways was terrible. He don't know what he's doing. It's my mother. And it hurt it. And I had to sign my mother, and back then they called it 302, and I'm 9 years old, and because I was a witness to her nervous breakdown and all stuff, I had to be the one to sign her into the mental institution, 9 years old. And my mother went, I'll never forget, in the back, because the police took you back then, and I'll never forget riding in the back of the paddy wagon with my mother to take her to the mental institution, and all she's doing is begging me, please don't do this to me. If you love me, you won't do this to me. And I'm 9 years old. I can't comprehend that. And all I'm thinking is, she needs some help. I don't want to be the one to hurt her, but I want to be the one to help her. Please don't do this to me. If you love me, you won't do this to me. And I had to sign her in, man. 9 years old. I'm signing papers. And then when I went to go see her a couple weeks later, because they heavily sedated her on all this medication, she appeared to be in worse condition than when I signed her in. Now I'm really hurting. Now, guess what? Everybody's going to get it. I started hurting my sisters and brothers. I was doing stuff to people I wouldn't even care. Honestly, I used to just walk down the street, and people would walk close to me, and I used to just hit dudes in the mouth. No reason. Just angry. God has done so much in me, man. People say to me now, James, I hear your story. It's just so hard to believe it. I don't know what y'all see, but I know what happened. I just thank God for that change, man, because I hated people. Honestly, I hated everybody. Shot my sister with a BB gun in her knee. I was 18, 19 years old taking contract hits. Dude would try to, he like, I don't want you killing nobody. I just want you to shoot him in the leg. I'm not, man, listen. Pay me to shoot him in the leg, but I'm going to do something else. And I'm just sharing with y'all my anger, my hurt, my deep resentment. God is so good. For whatever reason, he saw fit that I never, ever saw jail. Never, ever got caught doing anything. And I've done, like I said, just about anything you could think of. And I'm like, this is amazing. So I'm fighting and I'm asking this dude about step work. He wouldn't. And I start praying every day. Something came to my mind. I said, man, I want you to pray three times a day, no matter where you at, what you're going. There would be times I would be bagging up the dope, and I would look at my watch at the time. There was no cell phone back then. I've been clean almost 19 years. Now when I talk, I feel kind of old. And I'm really not old. I don't think 48 is old, but I'm old enough where it's like, damn, we didn't have cell phones and stuff. We didn't have none of that. That's why when people be tripping on that, like, man, there was a time when you had to call somebody's home phone, leave a message, wait for them to get home to call you. Now they for, I'll blow him up. He ain't called me back yet. Man, it takes time. And I'm not talking about months, but some people don't even give me a day to call back. You got a cell phone. Then they see, you got that Bluetooth. Why ain't you calling me back? Man, I don't have to call you back right now. I'm busy. You know what I mean? Here's a favorite one I used to hear. You button me. I can't believe you button me. What they call it, the FU button or something, when you pour people in the voicemail. And they're like, but you got a Bluetooth. I said, right. I don't want my phone ringing in my ear knowing I can't talk to you. So that's just a little, just my pet peeve. I don't understand how people get mad. I call, I just leave people a message. They button me. I tell, like Mickey, he's always cheating. I said, Mick, when I call you, if you can't answer, Because he's like, I don't button you. I said, Mick, please button me. I'd rather you button me instead of me sitting on the phone 30 seconds listening to this phone ring. Then I got to listen to your voice for 20 more seconds to leave a message. Button me. I'd rather you button me so I can get this message. Because I like leaving a message. I don't believe in it. I'm going to call him. He's seen my number. He better call me back. No, you don't leave no message with me. I ain't calling you back. I'm not doing that. Leave me a message. So anyway, we ain't have fun. Let me shut up. We ain't have fun with this stuff. So I looked at my thing, and it would be 3 o'clock, so go pray. And I would walk up from the, get away from the dope table. And I'm not trying to get nobody's solution to do wrong. I'm just telling y'all my story. I would get away from the dope table and go pray. And the dude that would be, he said, well, you know, so I'm going to go pray. He said, man, you're crazy. Honestly, at that time, I thought I was too. But when I read our literature, in 11, I'm going to see if I can find this. But at the time, I thought I was crazy too. But now when I read our literature, I realize I wasn't. I didn't know. I was really looking for something. That wasn't me. And I was changing. Like I said, in our 6th step, there'd be changes going on the inside before it become evident on the outside of the spiritual change. The negative change we see on the outside first, even though you're dead in the inside. You know what I mean? Like our 1st step is about evidence. And it's evidence that your life is unmanageable because we can see it. Because remember, we people that go on denial. You know what I mean? We go on denial, so we look at the evidence of our life to say when something's going on. Like when they say you're powerless and your life is unmanageable, we can see it. So he was like, man, Otto, you crazy, man. And I would be like, yeah, but I would still not stop praying. I kept on doing. And this is what the guy that was smart for me that kept telling me no. But I knew, and I would be like, God, please help me. I said, God, please. I said, I would talk to him like this. I'm selling this dope, and I really don't like it, and I need you to help me. I don't know what else to do. I don't know how to fill out a job application. Never had a job. I'm so afraid. I don't have a driver's license. Nobody's going to hire me. I need you to help me. Please, blah, blah, blah. Help me. Help me. Help me. I don't want to do this. Help me. And over time, every time I would go to bag this dope up, because I was justified by bagging it up and giving it to somebody to sell, so that was my justification. And over time, the more I went to bag this dope up at the table, the more I wanted to start getting high again. And I had to come down to a choice. And it was going to be my first Christmas clean. I got 3 kids that I ain't done nothing for because we're getting high. They had already... Because I'm selling dope, I'm asking the kids in September, I think, what y'all want for Christmas? I got it. I'm going to buy them all this stuff for Christmas. I'm going to hook them up, you know, calling it God, but it was really with shame. Because we want to extremely bless the kids after we get off of drugs for all the shameful stuff we did. My kids telling me all the stuff they wanted. Cool. They don't know I'm bagging up dope. They don't know. They think I'm collecting unemployment. I don't even know how they believe me, and they know I never work nowhere. But anyway, so I want to hurry up and get this done. So almost Christmas time. I can't do it anymore, and I called the dude I was getting all the stuff from. I said, listen, man, you got to come get this stuff. I'm going to flush it down the toilet. He said, what you talking about? I said, I'm done. He said, what? I said, come get it, or I'm flushing it down the toilet. You got the so-and-so time to come get it. I'm flushing all of it. I don't care anymore. He said, Otto, what about Christmas? What about your kids? F Christmas and F my kids. Come get it or I'm flushing it. I swear by God to y'all. I'm not here to try to prove none of y'all. I'm telling my honest story. I had no money saved up. Dead broke. I tricked away all my money. I tricked and bought clothes and jewelry. Bought a yellow Canary Seville. I actually parked in front of the meeting because I thought I needed these things to get you to love, like, and accept me. That's what I did. I wasted my money on this stuff. He said, man, I said, man, come get her. I'm flushing. I don't care about Christmas. Don't care about my kids. I don't care what they think. They could be mad at me. I don't care. I ain't doing this no more. He came and got it. My life changed after that. My life changed. I didn't know I was going to 3rd step. I didn't know I was making a decision to trust God, even though I didn't even believe yet, really. I didn't know I was making that decision. I didn't know I was making a decision. You know, our literature also talks about unconditional surrender in the It Works How and Why. Unconditional, because a lot of times we'll surrender with conditions. Yeah, I'll surrender if I know what I'm going to get. Can you surrender when you don't even know what the result is going to be? When you surrender and don't know what the results are going to be, and it's really aligned with God, He's going to bless you like you've never been blessed before. I promise you that. I'm going to try to hurry up to get to the end of this story. But let me read this other thing. It says, in addition to the open-mindedness so necessary to work in the 11th step, it is vital that we actively pursue knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. Knowledge is what we are searching for when we pray. Whether our prayers are desperate pleas or calm requests for guidance, regardless of our state of mind, when asking for guidance, we can be sure that our consistent efforts to seek knowledge of our higher power's will for us will be rewarded. I got a reward from God in spite of me selling dope, sleeping with six women, and all the stuff I was doing, just because I kept seeking Him in spite of my mindset. This is literature, not me. In spite of my, I didn't know this then. I just was doing something to get out. So in spite of my condition, I still need to be having a relationship with God. I still have a responsibility to try to get out. I can't cop. There's no more excuses. No matter what state I'm in, I hear people say, man, what are you praying? Yeah, you need to clear. No, I could pray to God about anything I'm in. Because like I said, I didn't know then, but I know now. The more I pray to Him, the more I get what God got. I need the courage to walk away from selling dope. I need the faith to walk away from messing with women. I needed honesty to get free from the deception of thinking that I need to have money, jewelry, clothes, cars in order to get you to like, love, and accept me. I needed open-mindedness to know that God will send me some angel, which was y'all, to change my life around if I just let Him. You know what I mean? I needed a commitment to stick with my decision, which brings character when you can stick with decision and stay with it long after feelings has passed in which you made the decision in. That's character. I didn't know I needed courage to tell somebody that I was the dope man because everybody didn't know. And it took I've never told nobody none. I kept secrets all my life, man. I didn't know then that the more I go to God, the more I get what God got. Check this out. God is reality, right? Reality, the root word of reality is real, which is a definition of God. I need to go to God more so I can get with reality more so that I can be able to see better and make good decisions. That's why they say improve upon an 11th step, because the longer you stay clean, more is going to be revealed. The less you have a relationship with God, your inability to handle what's revealed is going to be more likely that you'll cop out and get high. Because we all have deep-rooted reservations. It's in our literature. People that have been clean 20, 30 years, ask them, they tell you they keep working on stuff. Stuff keeps popping up. You'll wake up one day and say, damn, where did this come from? My first step, when I was writing on it, I was writing so much stuff, I couldn't believe it. I took the tablet and I threw it across the floor because I couldn't believe the stuff that was being revealed. I forgot the stuff that I did. And I was like, wow. But all that was my physical and mental transition to get to the 11th step where I get the spiritual aspect of this program, man. And I thank God for it all. And I'm telling you, I finally left that guy that was sponsoring me. I asked George J. to sponsor me. George wasn't afraid to meet people's disapproval because even way back then, more people disagree with people doing step work with a year. They were like, less than a year, no. They kept telling people no. Now, all through our literature, I study literature, and I still haven't found it yet where it says wait a year. I haven't found it yet where it said if you're a female, you should wait 1 year and 3 days and 12 hours. And if you're a male, you need to wait 15 months because you can handle more pain than a woman. I just haven't read any of this yet. So I'm wondering who made that up? What destructive power got into somebody that influenced all these people to believe that you have to have a year when it says God will reveal to us whatever we can handle. So if I pray and ask God to reveal to me what I need to write in my fourth step and He reveal it and I get high, it's my own reservation. It has nothing to do with you can't handle something. I mean, that's what I get out of literature. I don't have, look, I got sponsors that have multiple years clean. But besides that, they're recovering because I had them spend time with God, because that's what it's going to come down to in the end. It's about improving my relationship with God. All through the literature, it's all about improving. And our basic text, 11 7, they talk about results count in Narcotics Anonymous. And it's about improving, man. And George J. wasn't afraid to give me the steps. He gave me the 12 steps. Look, I met up with him and some other guys. He gave me 14 questions. Back then, we didn't have all this literature neither. Again, I feel a little old. We didn't have all this literature. We had basic text and stuff. So they wrote out your questions back then. They had some little format of four-step guide. They wrote out 14 questions that was pertinent to my life and the things that I were doing. I got out of those 14 questions more than what my sponsees are getting out of these 96. Now, I'm not saying I'm better than them. My point was God knew I can handle what I can handle out of those 14 questions, honestly. We got all this literature. And then I thank God, you know, in the flat book, because people start tripping about that. They think you got to write all 96 questions. You got to do this. The first page in the flat book says you can add to these steps, you can take away from them. It's basically saying you can be creative. It's up to you. It's the only suggested guidelines is don't do it by yourself. So they were creative. We was doing stuff then that hadn't even been written yet now. So with my sponsees, I'd be creative. I get to know them, listen to them, and I pray and ask God to speak to my spirit on what questions I should give them. And I go in, get questions out of all the different stuff and hand it to them. Some might get 20, some might get 30, some might get 15. It all depends. But anyway, moving on. He gave me set work, man. I wrote my first 4-step in 2 weeks. It wasn't those 6 months, none of that. I really wanted to change. But again, I didn't know what I was doing. God was guiding me, man. I didn't know that me praying to God, I was getting what God got, and I didn't know he had a mission that I was on. I didn't know he had a mission for me. I really didn't. I just wanted to feel better. And I wanted to stop hurting people. I wanted to stop looking at the wounded look in your eye from the shit I did to you yesterday. It hurt it. I wanted to go be a father to my kids. I wanted to be a friend to my friend. I wanted to be a son to my mother. I didn't want to just be good for nothing, meaning clean but not recovering. Clean is good. Recovery is great. I wanted to be somebody. I really did. I wanted to be somebody. I don't mind having an image in narcotics and harm. I think it's a good image when knowing that you clean and recovering. Not a perfect life, but I live a recovery life. My life has not been perfect. I'm telling you, it's not, but I live a recovery-centered life. And no matter what, I spend time in relationship with God. So what I got, man? 10 minutes, 15? All right, let me hurry and wind this down. So look, gave me step work, man. All right. He gave me step work, which is a beautiful thing. And I started doing step work. And like I said, for 2 weeks, my fourth step, I sat down and did my fifth step. I did my first fifth step with three men. All three of them had different experiences about mother. My one boy had, this one buddy of mine, man, his experience was his mother had a nervous breakdown when he was a kid. He had incest with his sister and them. The other buddy had, all three of these guys had all these experiences that brightened my eyes up and changed my life forever. I didn't know it was okay to feel that it felt good having incest, and I didn't know that expressing it got me freer. Because just saying it wasn't freedom. You know what I mean? It was a relief to say I did it, which is the truth. But to really get honest and say how you felt was freedom. So I had to start talking about how I felt, and even though I knew it was wrong, in every area of my life. And I got free. And I started doing step work, and my life changed. And then again, I started studying literature more and more. And like I said, I had no education. I had nothing, man. And in our fourth step again, it says that we begin to uncover the pure and loving spirit that lies at the core of our being. Those first 10 steps are all physical transformations that are taking place. When you start getting to the 11th step, now it's a spiritual transformation that's taking place. And God really do start to speak to you, and you can hear him more. He's already been speaking, but I can hear God more because I need to guide it. There's a reason why we want to unclutter our spirit, because he's trying to guide us all. All through the 11th step, it's talking about how we all have to take a different path. It got to the point where my sponsor, like George ain't my sponsor no more. He blessed me so much. But my sponsor started telling me, I would call my sponsor. He wouldn't give me the answer or solution. He said, man, you need to go pray, walk, pray, meditate, and figure it out yourself. And then come back and tell me what the results are. He started helping me to get in tune with this God that we talk about. Because God really do be talking. And again, read literature. He really do be talking to all of us. And he's just trying to help us. And it's just powerful because all of us are different. I treat all my sponsors different. He's trying to guide me. If I wouldn't have gotten a relationship with God, I would have shortcut my own blessings because I have God has stuff personal just for me. So what's for me is for me. What's for you is for you. And all my sponsors, I always tell them, man, make a decision. I might share my experience, but I'm not telling you what to do because God could work with you differently. Look, I hired an active crackhead. I own businesses, multiple businesses. And I'm going to try to hurry to get out of here. Multiple businesses. I hired an active crackhead. My wife said, what is wrong with you? My other employee said, you out your man, are you crazy? He would be in my offices and everything. And I said, why are you doing? I said, man, God told me to do it. I said, I know it's crazy. It don't even make sense to me. But I got enough experiences where God has spoken to me. I know He's doing it, and I better listen. And I just said, I'll take the risk. And I was scared, like, God, please, I don't want this dude stealing my phone. I own a landscaping business. I own a moving company. I own a daycare. I own an apartment. So he was around everything. And all I'm thinking is, this dude's going to steal my stuff. But I knew God spoke to me, and I hired him. And I didn't know why. I didn't know nothing. I didn't try to force N.A. on him, nothing. I ain't going to say, come on, you go into meetings. You want to work for me? You better do this. You better do that. I ain't do none of that to him. I just said, come to work, man. Come to work. Come to work. Come to work. Eventually, he asked me about N.A. Took him to one meeting. After that, he kept making excuses about going. I never said nothing. Just let it go. He still came to work for me. Eventually, I took him to, I forgot what this was. It's maybe a long story short. Eventually, I took him to this one place where he got the in-house. It's like a three-quarter way house or something like that. I had forgot all about him, man. I'm telling you, he called me a year later. This was years ago. He said, Otto, I'm just calling to say thank you for hiring me. I got a year clean. I just wanted to call and say thank you, because if you wouldn't have did it, I would have never got clean. To this day, this dude got multiples of years clean. Multiples, man. And I got so many experience with that. I'm not telling nobody to go do it. You got to get a relationship with God. God is always talking. But look, it says, only when we listen for the direction of our higher power are we able to hear it. The conscience of the group is most clearly expressed when every member is considered an equal. I consider him equal. I'm not no big guy. He's a little you because you're active and I ain't. And if I really get real, sometimes my disease is active. It just ain't active with crack. So we really the same. Depends on what day you check me. Honestly. I'd be upset sometimes. I don't even realize I was upset until after the obsession is over. I'd be like, damn, what is this? 7 hours doing that? Are you crazy? It says, the conscience of the group is most clearly expressed when every member is considered an equal. A higher power works through all of us, regardless of clean time or experience. Group conscience always exists, but we are not always willing or able to hear or allow its expression. Now, some might say that's second tradition, that's group conscience. No, our literature says we apply this in every area of our life. At home, me and my wife and daughter and us, we always have family meetings. And I'm telling you the honest God truth, 90% of the time, the 11-year-old comes up with a solution. Seriously, because God be expressing Himself, and it's also a form of humility where you understand, don't think that I got more time, more experience, more of this, that you can't say anything, because God will use anything. He used y'all to help me. So anyway, life changed, man. I started digging in the step work, and I started digging more and more and more. I wanted to be changed. I started spending 3-4 hours with God. I didn't have a job, nothing. I got hired by this landscaping company, and I got asthma right now to this day. And I went and put an application because I went to court, and the judge said, if you don't find a job, we're going to put you in jail because you need to pay child support. You ain't never paid child support. And I'm like, jail? Like, now I got a few months clean, jail? No, I ain't never been in. So my cousin gave me an application for a landscaping company. Now, I'm only filling it out because I'm scared to go to jail. I already know grass is going to make my asthma flare up. I can't work there, but the judge said, everywhere you put an application, I want a copy of the application. If you give me a bogus one, I'm going to put you in jail. So I would have somebody help me fill it out because I didn't know how to fill out applications. I didn't know nothing. I had no driver's license, no education. I had no nothing. I filled this out. Just to make a long story short, the guy ended up hiring me. And I'm thinking, I ain't going to be able to stay because that grass is going to kick my butt. To this day, the grass never affected me. I've never had an asthma attack cutting grass, nothing. I stayed with him for 3 years, started my own business. From that business, man, I'm telling you, from that business, I ended up starting a moving company. I got a moving company because I was helping a woman, a lady. She was in a program. She got a furniture voucher. I had a dump truck. And she said, Otto, could you come get this furniture for me? They gave me a voucher. I need this furniture, and I know you got a truck, and blah, blah, blah. I'll pay you. I told her, I said, you ain't got to pay me. I said, I'm going to just do it for free. I'll pay my worker. You keep the money. It's going to be a blessing. Because I was making indirect, because I dog women. Listen to me. Dog them. Dog to the worst. And I knew I had a responsibility to keep getting free, even though it might not have been you that I hurt. When the opportunity comes, keep getting free, James. And so I went to the store, pulled up in my dump truck with landscaping written on the Saturday. He come up. He said, oh, this is your truck? Yeah. He said, you want to deliver furniture for it? I'm like, no, sir, I got my own business. I'm self-employed. He said, no, you'll be self-employed. We need a delivery driver. I said, I don't got no moving truck. He said, you can use a dump truck. We don't care. I'm like, are you serious? This is a reputable business. Now, I don't even say the name. It's my anonymity, but it's Big Lots. And it was, and I'm like, all right, how do I do it? But I didn't know how you price. I didn't know how you do anything. I just figured it out. I prayed and asked God to give me what I need to make up a price list. But he said, make up a price list, bring me some insurance, bring me this. I did everything he asked. They hired me. Now, make a long story short, just to speed it up, they love me. Now I have 22 Big Lots stores. 22 stores I deliver furniture for. As a result of just making amends to myself and others, God blessed the group. And as a result of having all those stores, I'm able to bless other men that have a hard time getting a job. Still have a landscaping company. Still working on my own. As a result of that, I end up getting 2 daycare centers, our apartment buildings, everything, man. One of my dreams, I got a house that this guy just gave to me. He said, man, I just really like you. I'm going to give you this house. Do you want it? I said, yeah. He said, I'll just charge you $20,000 for it. I said, are you serious? He said, and you don't got to pay me nothing for a year. And my dream, he didn't even know my dream. I had always dreamed of having a 3-quarter-way house. And honest to God, not to really make money. I want a place where men can come get another chance. I know people talk about 3-quarter-way houses. They're crazy. They're insane. But guess what? We all were and still can be. But all of us came out of insanity. God birthed all of us out of insanity that made us beautiful, man. We were all a little seed stuck in some dirt. Needed rained on. Needed fertilized. Needed tilled. And now look at us. Beautiful flowers, man. You know what I mean? People don't understand. Like I said, I do landscaping. In order to, you can't grow up unless you grow down. If you grow up too fast, you're going to fall over when the storm comes. Remember when we were kids, we just wanted to hurry up and grow up? Then life whooped our butt. We're only right back to mommy again? Right back. So we grew up too fast. It's the same way with life. All of it is symbolic to life. I'm going to close with all this. But look, God blessed me with everything. I mean, I'm like, my life is so wonderful. Like I was telling, me and Dennis was talking about peace. I didn't know I was really looking for peace, love, and acceptance. I kept settling for sex and pain. I thought money was my solution. I'm telling you, when I stopped chasing money, stopped chasing sex, stopped chasing all those things, my life, the quality of my life improved internally. So when I got stuff externally, it was really God's will. Because I can get some stuff. But is it God's will for the stuff that I got? And most of the time I can tell because do I have the stuff or do the stuff got me? And I could tell if the stuff got me if I manipulated to get the stuff and still manipulating to keep the stuff. Because our 11th step in the flat book says, here's how you can tell if it's God's will or not. Are you being honest? Are you manipulating? It's real simple stuff. And my life has changed. Man, I live in a wonderful house. I went from living in Manchester with rats, roaches, and all that stuff. And now I live with squirrels, man. I live with squirrels and rabbits when I come out of my house. We first moved in the darn neighborhood. I heard a knocking on the door. I got scared. But I'm like, oh, somebody knocked on the door. Nobody know we live here. Go out. They're gone. They got a basket with little wine and crackers and all kinds. I was just like on TV. I'm like, they really do this stuff. So, powerful, man. Look. There's so much I want to say now. I told you it'd be hard once I get started. God is good. God is so good, man. I'm going to talk about my family. But look, he blessed me everything. Our house caught on fire. I bought a house for $250,000, my first house. My mom was dying of cancer. I wanted my mom to be proud again. My mom was proud of me. When my mom was dying, I made amends to her. My mom said, boy, don't even worry about this. I don't even remember half the stuff you're telling me because I almost killed somebody in front of my mom. My mom jumped in front of the gun when I tried to blow this dude's head off and grabbed it just in time. Saved me so many times. So when I got clean, like I said, I wanted to be a good son. My mom, I understand. I used to hear people talk about forgive and forget. And I'm like, ain't no way you can forget. My mom gave me an example of forgetting and forgiving. Because towards the end, when me and her used to talk, she's like, I don't even remember that. I don't remember that. I don't remember that. You did that? I don't remember it. And we stand here like, damn, I understood forgetting. Because of the recovery and the change, it helped wipe away the pain and the insanity that she saw. So she didn't remember that no more. Because I had years of goodness that I had placed in front of my mother. When she was dying, man, it hurted me. Because I wanted her to be proud of her. I wanted her to see my house. I bought my house October 15, 2010. took my mother to the hospital October 18th. They diagnosed her with stage 4 stomach cancer. Stage 4 was already too late. They said 3 to 6 months. Here's what's powerful. In July, God awoke me up out of my sleep and said, get ready for a storm. I woke my wife up. We took hands and we prayed. I said, God told me to get ready for a storm. My wife said, oh, no. Because my wife sees so many experiences when God will speak to me and stuff come to pass. I didn't know what was going to happen. I just knew something was going to happen. 3 weeks after I bought my house, I'm going to the hospital every day, taking care of my mom because I was the power of attorney, taking care of my mom. My wife comes home from the hospital. Our house is on fire. $250,000 house. We hadn't even unpacked yet. We lost everything. We were homeless. Homeless. 3 weeks. And I'm like, God, I prayed about this. I wanted this house. I prayed. We was patient. We waited a year. We didn't even force it. We ain't manipulate. We ain't do nothing. I ain't get a chance to show my mother this house yet. Oh, I can't believe it. When we got the house, I was pre-approved for $350,000. Me and my wife was looking at $350,000 houses. They were nice. But nothing fit in the spirit. So we said, let's get the $250,000 one instead of trying to get this $350,000 just because we're approved for it. Get the $250,000. So we got the $250,000. It was nice, but you know $350,000 is always better than $250,000. Check this out. Here's how powerful God is. I'm trying to be considerate of the time. The house caught on fire. We're devastated. We're homeless. I've been feeding the homeless for years. People didn't even know I used to feed the homeless. PJ and all of us used to go under the bridges and old houses down in the woods looking for them. Feed. I used to do it by myself, and people started finding out that I was doing it, but I never would tell nobody. It was another way. I want to just give back. I want to give back to some strangers. I don't want it to be known what I'm doing. I want to be a secret blessing to somebody. And I would cook the food and make sure it's hot and hurry up and just drive around. I would go in abandoned houses and everything. And I'm feeding the homeless for years. Then it happened now. We're homeless. I'm like, damn. Mom can't see the house because she's in the hospital with cancer. I don't want to tell her house burnt up. She know I bought it, but I don't want to tell her it burnt up. Make a long story short, man, listen. I was so excited when I bought the house. I got extra insurance that I didn't even know. I was just like, I want this, I want that, I want that. How about the house got remodeled, brand new house, same place, custom made, let my wife design it whatever way she wants. Guess how much it's worth? $350,000. Here's what's more powerful. That's the physical evidence that God gives to me and other people so that he can show people that he's alive and well and he's in the blessing business when you live according to principle. Because I could have got the $350,000 and it still would have been not God's will, but I could have came and told y'all God is good. But it would have been a lie because my spirit said, don't do it. I stuck with obedience and got the $250,000. My house is worth really $375,000. But more importantly than that, the neighbors never talked to each other. And they had been there for 10, 15 years. Some of the neighbors never talked to each other, never said, as a result of our house catching on fire, it brought the whole community together. Now we have block party, we have cookies exchange, we have garage sale, we got all emails addressed, we got all the stuff that the community do. I got a trampoline in my backyard, the neighbor got a pool, so the kids take turns going to different people's house for toys and stuff, so now you ain't got to buy all these toys, so-and-so got a power wheel, go over there, you want to go swimming, go over there, got it? Look, it's a blessing, we be sitting in the kitchen, eating, and you hear something, you know, like, what is that? Oh, the kids on the trampoline, because they just come over. And it's so powerful what God can do, man. And my life has just changed drastically. Like I said, a guy gave me a house for $20,000. He didn't know that was my dream. He didn't know, man. And this is my last in closing, I promise you. Me and my family do this we've been doing this for years, but we'll buy a puzzle and we put the puzzle together as a family. And it's our way of bonding. It's a way of peace, settle down, no work, no nothing. And we all sit there and try to put, you know, the puzzle together. You know, on the puzzle, the first thing you generally do is try to do the outline first. So we're doing the outline on this one last week. It's 750 pieces to this puzzle. And these are the tiny ones, too. And we're doing, there's one gap that's missing that we can't figure out. Where's the gap at to close off the end so it can be all squared off? We can't find it. We went through every single piece. I took some. My 11-year-old took some. My wife took some. We're going through every piece because if we don't find this one to close this off, nothing can connect to that side because there's a piece missing. My sponsee and his girlfriend comes over. She said, what are y'all doing? I said, we're doing a puzzle. We always do this together. Yeah, really? And the way they looked at it, like, damn, that's kind of strange. I said, it's a bonding that we do. We make commitments to spend time together because a family that prays together stays together. A family that plays together stays together. That's why I said we have family time together. We sit down and talk about issues, everything. You ain't going to bed with no attitude. Let's talk. And after we talk, you still want to go with attitude. Okay, but at least we know we talk. So she said, oh, okay. She grabbed the missing piece and put it right here. Where'd you get that from? She's like, it's right here all along. I'm like, wow. That's how God be. It be right there in front of us all along. But here's how powerful it is, man. Me, my wife, and us, they all got different sections. If we don't work as a team, we don't put this puzzle together. The puzzle never gets completed if we don't work as a team. Team is the best thing in the world, man. My wife needed certain calories and stuff because part of it said, I forgot it was a drugstore or something like that. She said, if y'all see the red drugstore, give me that. And my daughter, she's 11 years old. Again, she want to hurry up. She want everything to hurry up. I can't find it, so she's ready to quit. You know what I mean? She's ready to give up because she can't hurry up. Like Kennedy, you got to learn to be patient. Doing a puzzle helps you to be patient. Be patient. What do you need? Tell us what you need. If I run across it, I'm going to give it to you. Here's what I need. If you run across it, give it to me. But while you're looking, while you're waiting for your piece, work on this area of your life until you find the missing piece. That's what God has done for me. In our basic text right here, it says we deal with the most obvious problem and leave the rest alone. Because that's how good God is. You don't have to be a perfect recovering addict. In here it says there's no model of the perfect recovering addict. Don't think if you're struggling in one area, you shouldn't work on the other. Effort, let me just give up. No. Work until the peace come together. She wanted to hurry up. Be patient, baby. And it's about patience. It really is. It's about patience. That's how we all put each other together. All of us come in. I met PJ some years ago. He talks to me and puts pieces together in my life. I talk to him and put pieces together. Same way with Justin over there. Pieces, pieces, pieces. Y'all invited me here. I'm a piece of a missing puzzle. Y'all were a piece of my missing puzzle. Y'all gave me another hope shot as a result of driving through the fog and running into a dam and all. It just gave me more confidence. So now, next time something happens, I can remember this and just keep going forward. I don't have to have nothing to even worry about because I know God is good. I know God is going to work it out. I know He's going to take care of me no matter what. So, we are free to live in the present, able to enjoy each moment and experience gratitude for the gift of recovery. Memories of the past no longer hold us back, so new possibilities appear. We are free to go in directions we never considered before. We are free to dream and to pursue the fulfillment of our dreams. Our lives stretched out before us like a limitless horizon. We stumble from time to time, but the 10th step gives us the opportunity to pick ourselves up and keep walking forward. It's my favorite part of the whole book. The higher power, our higher power has given us an invitation to live. And I say this all the time because this is one thing I try to close out with all the time to remind myself. Listen, my daughter just had a wedding. She had to send out invitations. They only invited people that they know. You don't send invitations to people you don't know. Our higher power has given us an invitation to live. Y'all know y'all worst secrets. Y'all know y'all worst shame, guilt. Y'all know what y'all did last night. I know what I did last night, last week, last month, last year, whatever. And God's still giving us an invitation to live? Don't get no better than that. Somebody who really knows us, He's seen it all, and He gives us an invitation to live, and we don't take advantage of it? And the advantage of the invitation to live is do step work. It said our higher power has given us an invitation to live, and we accept it with gratitude. Gratitude is an action word. I mean, I got to do step work. Even after almost 19 years clean, I'm still responsible for taking a look at me, letting y'all help me with the broken pieces of my life, and keep putting this unfinished puzzle together. Thanks for letting me share.